He looked up at the oracle on her throne, sitting like an ivory statue with her hands folded on her lap and her face painted with cosmetics to resemble a mask. Forehead white with antimony powder, eyelids metallic shiny blue, and the mouth a vivid slash of scarlet in the pale face. He found a focus for his bad temper. As he made a perfunctory obeisance, he remembered how often this witch had thwarted and unsettled him. He detested these sessions of divination, and yet found that they exerted a weird fascination. He realized that much of her oracle was dross, probably inspired by the politically active priesthood. Yet there was also much shrewd comment and excellent counsel amongst it. And occasionally there were nuggets of purest gold to be gleaned from the witch's lips. During his regular visits, he had tuned his ear to catch the nuances of the oracle's voice. As with Rib Adai, the witch had shades of conviction or hesitation in the manner in which she delivered the oracle. Lannan was sensitive to these, but more particularly so to a rarer tone, a monotonous, low-pitched voice, which the witch used when she spoke the miraculous, God-given truths of real prophecy. Now he took up his stance before her, legs planted firmly astride, clenched fists on his hips. With the arrogance of royalty heightened by his temper, he asked the question. Tanith hated these sessions with the Grey Lion. He awed and frightened her. It was like being caged with some beautiful but savage predator, with its restless energy and unpredictable moods. The pale, steely blue of his eyes had a predator's cold, killing lust. His features were chiseled perfect, but cold also, with the same relentless passion. Usually she had the comfort of Hui's presence behind the curtains to carry her through, but this morning she was alone and sick. The night had been hot and airless, and the child in her womb as heavy as a stone. She had risen, listless and pale, from her couch, her skin damp with night sweat, and she had forced down the light morning meal Aina had prepared for her, only to vomit it up again in a dizzy attack of nausea. The taste of acid, bitter bile was in the back of her throat now, and sweat poured down beneath her cloak, tickling as it slid over her flanks and fruitful belly. She felt herself stifling, her breathing hunting raggedly for air, her body limp and weak, while the king growled his questions. She was unprepared. Her answers were empty words given without conviction, and she struggled to concentrate to remember what Hui had told her. The king was becoming restless. He strode back and forth before her, wearying her with his energy. She felt sweat break out beneath her mask of cosmetics. Her skin felt itchy and swollen, the pores blocked with paints, and she longed to wipe it away. She had a sudden wondrous image of cool water falling over moss-covered rocks, of plunging her naked body into the green water, of sinking into it with her hair spreading on the surface like the tendrils of a water plant. Come, witch! Come, O seer of the future! It's a simple question, answer it! The king was stopped before her, one foot on the throne steps, shoulders drawn back and hips thrust forward in masculine hauteur. A sneer on his handsome face, and mockery in his voice. Tanith hadn't heard the question. She floundered for words, and another wave of nausea washed over her. She felt sweat break through the film of paint on her upper lip, and the nausea changed to dizziness. Lannan's face receded, and blackness closed about her. Her vision narrowed, and she looked down a long shaft of darkness, at the end of which Lannan's face burnt like a golden star. There was a roaring in her ears, the sound of the storm wind through the trees of the forest. And then the sound of the wind died away into silence, and a voice spoke. The voice was husky and low-pitched, even and monotonous. The voice of a deaf woman, or one drugged by the smoke of the bang pipe. With mild surprise, Tanith realized that the voice issued from her own throat, and the words shocked her. Lanon Hycenus, last Grey Lion of Opet, question not the future. The future for you is darkness and death. She saw her own shock repeated upon Lannan's face, saw the colour fly from his cheeks, and his lips turn to lines of pale marble. Lannan Hycenus, prisoner of time, pacing behind the bars of your cage, blackness waits for you. Lannan was shaking his head, trying to deny the words. The golden locks of his hair, still damp from the ritual bath, danced upon his shoulders, and he held up both hands in the sun sign, trying to avert the words which struck his soul like war arrows flighted from the bow. Lannan Hycenus, your gods are passing. They fly upwards and leave you to blackness. Lannan retreated from the throne, hands raised to shield his face, but the words sought him out relentlessly. Lannan Hycenus, you who seek to know the future, know that it lies in wait for you, as the lion awaits the unwary traveller. Lannan cried out, and his terror exploded into violence. Evil! He screamed, and rushed at the oracle bounding up the steps of the throne. Witchcraft! He struck Tanith in the face with his open hands, knocking her head across and back with heavy blows. The hood of her cloak fell back, and her dark hair tumbled loose. The blows rang loudly against her flesh, but Tanith made no sound. Her silence drove Lannan on to further violence. He caught the front of her cloak and dragged her from the throne. Sorceress! He screamed, and flung her down the steps. She fell heavily and rolled, trying to come to her feet. But Lannan's first kick caught her in the belly, and she doubled up, clutching at her middle and groaning as his sandaled feet smashed into her. Lannan was bellowing as he pursued her about the chamber. Between kicks he was looking wildly about for a weapon, something to destroy the woman and the words she had spoken. And then, suddenly, the chamber was filled with priestesses, and Lannan drew back, panting heavily, the pale eyes bright with madness. Majesty, the Reverend Mother came forward, and Lannan's madness faded, but he was still shaking, and his lips were white and quivering. He turned and strode from the chamber, leaving Tanith whimpering upon the flagged floor. The Divine Council of Astarte met in the Reverend Mother's chamber, and when she read the Grey Lion's demand to them, they listened quietly, thinking their own thoughts. The council consisted of the High Priestess and two advisers, both of them senior priestesses, who stood in the direct line of succession to the Reverend Mother. How can we deliver one of the sisterhood to the temporal body of the Grey Lion? What precedents would we set by doing so? Sister Alma asked. She was small and wrinkled, with a face like an inquisitive monkey. What crime is the child accused of? If she has erred, then it is for us to judge and punish. We must protect our own, even if it means defying the king. Can the sisterhood afford such a grand gesture? Asked Sister Harker. Dark-skinned, pockmarked, with long raven hair streaked with iron grey, her face was strong-jawed and her voice deep as a man's. She was not yet 40 years of age, and certain to outlive the Reverend Mother. Until recently, it seemed, she must succeed to the head of the sisterhood, a position for which she longed. However, since an oracle had emerged in Opet, her position was less secure. History had proved that every oracle in time became Reverend Mother over the claims of all others. In addition, this one had the unquestioned favor of the High Priest, an important consideration when it came to the filling of a vacant position at the head of the Divine Council. In Tanith, she had a strong rival. But apart from the political considerations, Sister Harker had a more intimate score to reckon. Even now, as she remembered how her advances had been rejected, she felt hot anger flood her cheeks. She still longed for the girl. Dreams of her still troubled her sleep. And often when she was with a young novice in the dark, she would pretend that it was Tanith. Are we strong enough to resist the demands of the king? She let the question hang and looked at their faces. All of them knew what an impetuous, irresistible force ruled in Opet. All of them knew that no one, noble or priest, friend or enemy, had ever denied him his way. The silence persisted until Sister Alma coughed gusts of tortured sound that crescendoed until she spluttered up a lump of bloody phlegm and wiped her lips with a damp cloth, her face strained and her eyes dull and tired. Not long for you, old woman, thought Sister Harker, with her grim satisfaction hidden behind a mask of concern. Again they were silent until the Reverend Mother spoke hesitantly. Perhaps if it could be shown that the girl has sinned, committed some crime. It was all that Sister Harker needed, and ruthlessly she took charge. Send for the girl, she instructed. Let us question her. Aina helped Tanith into the chamber, both of them hobbling and doubled over, one with age and the other with pain. They clung to each other, and the ancient priestess was mumbling encouragement to the injured girl, but her face screwed up with anger when she saw the council, and she screeched at them. The child is hurt. Have you no care? Why do you summon her thus? Silence, old hag. Sister Harker spoke without passion. She was looking at Tanith. Tanith's face was swollen, and the bruises were purplish and livid. Her one eye was closed, the lid puffed and blue, and her lip was cut through and scabbed. Let her sit, Aina demanded. She is weak and sick. Nobody sits before the council, said Sister Harker. In the name of the goddess. Do not blaspheme here, old crow. I speak not of blasphemy, but of ordinary mercy. You talk too much, Sister Harker warned her. Go, leave the girl here. It seemed that Aina might argue still, but Sister Harker rose to her feet and her face was furious and her voice harsh with anger. Go, she repeated. And Aina shuffled out, grumbling and whining, leaving Tanith swaying weakly on her feet before the council. Sister Harker sank down onto her stool and looked at Tanith. She would take her time now. There was all day if she needed it. And besides, she was enjoying herself. Tanith stayed upright by an effort of her will alone, for her senses swam and floated on waves and washes of pain. The leaden feeling in her legs and lower belly anchored her, but she could make little of the questions with which they pelted her. Sister Harker was leading her on to what it was that she had told the king to infuriate him. She was showing how Tanith had endangered the sisterhood by antagonizing him. She kept coming back to the question, what was it you told him? I cannot remember, sister. I cannot remember, Tanith whispered. You want us to believe that words of such dire consequence can so easily be forgotten? Oh, come, child, what were they? They were not my words. Whose, then? Sister Harker leaned forward attentively, her face blotched with brown speckles of the pox and the wings of grey glowing in her dark hair. Whose words were they, if not your own? The goddesses? I do not know, breathed Tanith. And then she gasped as a fist of agony squeezed something within her lower belly. Do you speak with the voice of the goddess? Sister Harker demanded in her hoarse voice, dark and cruel as a bird of prey, the hawk stooping on the sparrow. Oh, please, whispered Tanith, bowing slowly forward with both hands pressed to her stomach. Please, it hurts. Oh, how it hurts. The three priestesses, watching her, saw the quick flood of liquid which drenched the front of Tanith's tunic skirts and splattered in dark red drops upon the flagstones between her feet. With slow grace, Tanith folded and fell forward. She lay on her side with her knees drawn up, and she moaned softly. Sister Harker went quickly to her and stooped over her, drawing up Tanith's skirts and peering with tense lesbian interest as she pulled Tanith's knees roughly apart. She was smiling as she straightened and looked at the other two. "There is your sin, holy mother. There is your proof of crime." She looked down at the huddled body at her feet. "Sacrilege," she accused harshly. "Sacrilege, a crime against the goddess." "I will not answer," said Tanith gently. The bruises had faded and the swelling abated a little, but there was still a plum-coloured smear under one eye, and her lip was distorted and scarred. She'd been bedridden for 10 days and was still weak. "I will not tarnish something so dear to me with words. I will not tell you his name. Child, you know this is a matter of mortal sin. Your life is at stake here," said the Reverend Mother. "You have taken life from me already. Have done, then, take it all." Tanith looked directly at Sister Harker, and from her to Lannan Hyckinus, who was standing by the casement of the chamber. "It is your intention to kill me. Nothing I say will alter that. Very well, then. I will cherish the name of my child's father. I shall not let you use this against him also." "You are being stupid and stubborn," said Sister Harker. "We will find out in the end." "Why is it important?" Tanith asked. "All that matters is that I stand between you and your ambitions." Tanith looked directly at Sister Harker and saw her words had struck by the swarthy rose flushing of the priestess's scarred cheeks. Tanith smiled and turned to Lannan. "All that matters is that I am the source of the prophecy. You seek to destroy that. You seek to have the gods revoke their sentence upon you. It is vain, Lannan Hyckinus. The winds of destiny are blowing. The hounds of fate are already hunting." "Enough," snapped Lannan, striding to the center of the chamber. "I have no more time to waste, and no longer can I listen to your idiot chatter." He looked at Sister Harker. "Bring the old priestess, the witch's chaperone." When Aina stood blinking and bewildered before the king, he looked at her without passion or anger. "You had duties. You did not discharge them. Name the bull who mounted the goddess's heifer." Aina wailed protest, disclaimer, pleading her ignorance. She went down on creaking knees before Lannan, crawling to him, kissing the hem of his tunic, drooling with terror. Lannan pushed her away irritably with one foot and looked at Sister Harker. "Unless I misjudge your worth, you will not shirk man's work. Have you the belly for it?" he asked. And Sister Harker nodded, licking her lips, her eyes lighting with cruel anticipation. "Break her arms first," commanded Lannan, "and let the witch stand close by to watch it." Sister Harker pulled Aina to her feet, holding her easily with her strong brown hands, on the back of which grew long, silky black hairs. Anna flapped and squawked with terror, and Sister Harker turned and pinned her, twisting one arm backwards against the elbow joint. The arm was thin and white, with thick blue cords of vein showing through the skin. "Wait," cried Tanith. "Wait. Let her go."
"Release her," ordered Lennon.
Tanith went to the old priestess and kissed her gently on the forehead and cheek. Aina was sobbing.
"Forgive me, child. I'm sorry. I would have told them. Forgive me."
"Gently, old mother. Gently now," Tarneth led her to the doorway and pushed her tenderly out of the chamber. She went back to them and spoke to the king.
I will tell you his name, but you alone.
Leave us, commanded Lannan, and the divine council rose and filed from the chamber. When they were alone, Tarneth said the name, proudly and defiantly, and she saw Lannan reel as though it had been a physical blow. How long has he been your lover? He asked at last.
5 years, she answered.
So, he said, and saw the answer to many questions. It seems we shared his love then.
Nay, Majesty, Tarneth shook her head. I had all of it.
You are wise to speak of it as past, Lannan told her. He turned away to stand by the casement and looked out across the lake. Nothing must come between us, he thought. I need him. I need him.
What will it be, Majesty? Poison? Or the secret dagger? How will you kill a priestess of Astarte? Have you forgotten that I belong to the goddess?
No, said Lannan. I have not forgotten. And I will send you to her on the 10th day of the Festival of the Fruitful Earth. You will go as the messenger of Opit to the gods.
Hui will not allow it, whispered Tarneth in horror.
Hui is in the north, a long way from the pool of Astarte.
He will hate you for it always.
You'll lose him forever, Tarneth warned him. But he shook his head. He will never know that I ordered it so. He will never know that you betrayed him and told me his name. He smiled then, a cold and golden smile. No, it is you that will lose him, and I that will have him. You see, I need him, and my need is more important than yours.